Although amongst the four major sports of basketball, baseball, hockey, and football, hockey certainly at this point has the least popularity. It is tremendously popular and is a billion-dollar industry, but amongst those four is certainly the least popular. However, I believe it has the coolest trophy for the winner. The Stanley Cup is infamous. Stanley Cup is almost 3 feet tall and weighs approximately 35 pounds. And something that after the team wins the Stanley Cup and the owner gets it and gives it over to the captain and he hoists it over his shoulders up in the air, it's a very exciting thing to see. And what I enjoy seeing is prior to giving it to the owner, you see them bring out the Stanley Cup and the people who are working for the NHL who are holding the cup, they're holding it with white gloves. They're holding it, they're treating it like a treasure, like they're holding something that is extremely rare and precious that chas v'shalom, their fingerprints should get on it. And when it comes to building the Mishkan that we read about in this week's Parsha, so of course we're building Kelim for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. But something that's interesting that maybe you've thought of, maybe you haven't, is that why is it that the Mishkan is just made of very, very expensive material. Almost all the kelim and the structure itself is made out of gold, out of pure gold. Why is that? The Mishkan is something that represents ruchnius. It's something that symbolizes our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And certainly amongst the Balei Musar, they're not really such big fans of gashmius, of physicality, and of indulging in the world that we have. And yet, over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us to make it of gold. You know, you're going to make me a house? Make me a nice house. Like, I don't want some cheap material. It almost doesn't sit right. So that's question one. So why is it that we're commanded to make it out of gold? When it comes to the Aron, which was placed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so the Torah tells us in Parakaf Hey, B'tabaz ha'aron yiyu habadim b'lo yasur mimenu, that when you put the poles into the rings, when you build the aron, once those poles are in place, lo yasur mimenu, you can never remove them. They were never allowed to take the poles out. The Gemara in Yuma on Daf Ayin Beis Amar Aleph says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Hamazia choshe me'ala eifod v'maser v'day aron loke, that if someone were to remove these poles, they'd get malchus. It's not just like, yeah, you shouldn't do it. It's like, you get 39 lashes if you were to remove these poles. So what's the reason? Why can't they take off the poles? Certainly, when it comes to the poles are there for carrying, for whenever they have to change and leave the encampment and move on and travel in the desert. Or we know that when they went off into war, they brought the Aron to war with them. So why can't they just take off the poles? Because it's very possible they're going to be situated and it's going to be dormant for a long period of time till they're going to need to move. And then, okay, so when they need to move, they'll put the poles back in and then they'll carry it out. What's the big deal? So Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Tzadivav explains, Misharshe Mitzvah. The root of this mitzvah, Lefish Aron Mishkan HaTorah V'hi Kol Ikarnu V'Kvodenu. Then when it comes to the Aron, when it comes to the Mishkan itself in the Torah, it's extremely precious to us. It's something we have to treat with tremendous sanctity, tremendous kavod. V'nes Chayvenu L'nhog Bo Kol Kavod V'Kol Hadar V'Kol Yachatenu. And we have to do everything we can, all our abilities to treat it properly. He says, Alkein, is Tavinu Libal Nasir Bade Haram Imenu, Penny Yatzrichim Atzesim Haaron Lashum Bakobim Heroes. Because what might happen is they're going to need to travel quickly. They're going off to war. There's a battle. They have to take that arm. They have to go. Vulai, and perhaps, Mitoch Hatrada Vachipazon Lo Nivdok Yafel Yos Badav Chazakim Kalatorach. Maybe because they're in such a rush, they're in such a hurry that when they take the Aron, they were to put in the poles, maybe they wouldn't secure them properly. V'shema chas v'shalom yipol v'ein zekvodo. Maybe chas v'shalom, then the Aron would fall, the poles would come out because they're loose, and the Aron will fall down, and that would be a tremendous tremendous lack of kavod to the Aron. And so because maybe at some point if they have to go in a hurry, maybe it's going to be where they wouldn't secure it properly and maybe it would fall. So we're so cautious, so careful for the slightest pagam in the Aron that we always have to have those poles in. Could be for years where it's not going to be moving, but always there, just in case. Just in case, chas shalom, something might happen. We have to treat everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, with the utmost sanctity. And when it comes to the building of the Mishkan, the reason why it's in gold is not for Hashem. Hashem doesn't care about the gold, but the gold's there for us. And gold in this world symbolizes something chashuv. And certainly, you should not have another structure in the world that is viewed as endowed with more chashivos than the Mishkan. Nothing more than that. Nothing more than the Aron, than all that came, the menorah. And therefore, it's made out of gold for us to realize how chashuv it really is. It's true that in this world we are supposed to stay away from gashmis. However, one of the exception is that whenever there's gashmis that's used to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's an amazing thing. That's not gashmis, that's ruchnius. You take the gashmis and you're giving something over to Hashem, you're uplifting it, you're elevating it in order to serve Hashem, to make it ruchnius. And to have these objects and these structured in such a way where we view it with the utmost kavod and the utmost kedusha and respect, that's something that we have to instill within ourselves to realize how holy these things are. Rav Moshe Benovitz began his career teaching in one of the modern Orthodox high schools in the tri-state area. And he was teaching, I believe it was seniors, but maybe not, but I know for a fact it was the low-level class. And it was a very, very difficult group of kids. Certainly, as a high school rabbi who teaches the lowest track, I could certainly relate. And he said that, I've heard him say that, it was very, very difficult to really expect almost anything of these kids. The way they spoke and the way they behaved. And he said, what would happen is they would sit down, and then he would say, okay, guys, get your Gemaras. And their Gemaras were in the side of the room, in the bookshelf. And they would take the Gemara. One of them says, like, Ari. And Ari would be on the other side. He'd say, yeah, here. And he would take the Gemara, and he'd throw it across the room to Ari to catch. And he'd say to the next guy, Mike. And I said, yeah, here. And he'd throw it a few feet away to Mike. And Rav Benovitz stopped that. And he told them, he says, whatever you do, do not throw a Gemara. I don't care if you don't learn the Gemara, if you're not interested in the Gemara, but there's a way to treat the Gemara. There's a way we have to view the Gemara. When I teach my class, so certainly I make sure that they do not throw the Gemara, but on the first day I know from a colleague of mine, right, Shlomo Landau, I've been saying this for years, that he told me he says this on the first day. I tell students, and I tell my talmidos, that when it comes to Gemara, you should not say, this Gemara makes no sense. You should not say that phrase. You could say, this Gemara makes no sense to me. That you could say. Because in the former, you're stating that this is illogical. This just doesn't make sense. I'm above this. I understand this, and this makes no sense. But in the latter, you're showing a sense of humility, saying, this Gemara does make sense. I just can't understand this. This Gemara doesn't make sense to me. And the way we view, I'm just using Gemara as an example, but the way we view books of Kedusha, the way we view Makomos HaKadoshim, the way we view holy places, and the way we treat holy places, is an extremely important lesson to ourselves and to those around us. And we have to demonstrate proper care for all objects that are imbued with Kedusha and how we act in places of Kedusha. How we behave in shul and the conversations that we have with people, of course, not during davening, but even after davening, if we're still in the sanctuary, we shouldn't talk about certain things there in the presence right in front of the Aron Kodesh, in the place where we daven. We have to treat the places of Kedusha with a certain level, degree of awe, of reverence. And for those who have kids, or for those who don't yet, but when you bring up kids, and I only have a one-year-old, but I certainly know and will be very, very conscious when my son comes to shul with me, that they observe everything. They absorb everything. And to speak in a certain way, to act with a certain level of reverence in shul, for them to see us acting in that way is the most valuable lesson that we could ever give to someone. Then to realize that there are objects of Kedusha, and there are places of Kedusha, and we treat them differently than we treat other things.